Tune into this week's Xamarin Show, where I have my good friend Brady on, talking about all the things you need to know about Web API and Xamarin, which are better together. So tune in. Welcome back, everyone, to another Xamarin Show. I'm your host, James Montemagno. And today, I have my best friend in the entire world, Brady Gaster, on. How's it going, Brady?
Going great. How's it going?
It's going super good. Now, this is a fun episode because, as everyone probably knows from watching this show, or if you don't, if you're brand new, I am a client mobile developer, been doing Xamarin development for 10 years. And I kind of know nothing about backend web development or any web development at all. I can struggle my way through, but Brady is like the backend web service, like expert extraordinaire. So this is going to be a fun crossover collaboration, Brady.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Kind of like, We never did this when you got on your SignalR wavelength. We actually never did one of these together, and we should probably do one of those. That'd be a lot of fun.
It's true. It's like kind of for a long time, Brady's worked on all these awesome, cool web things, and he'll always put together a demo. And I was like, "What about a Xamarin demo?" And he's like, "Well, you know, I don't do any client development." And I was like, "All right, let me send a PR your way. I gotcha." But yeah, it's good to finally connect. And what all are you working on, Brady, at Microsoft, so people may not be aware of who Brady is?
Sure, I can do that. So I'm Brady Gaster. I am a PM on the Azure Experience, the Azure Developer Experience team. I focus on .NET. Specifically, a couple of products that I PM are SignalR, the real-time love. I also work a lot with our worker template. And this month, and pretty much for the last year and a half, I've really been focusing on HTTP APIs. I try not to say REST because you never know what's REST and what's not REST. So, but I'll just say HTTP APIs. And for the most of this conversation, we'll be talking about ASP.NET Core Web API. So that's kind of where I've been partying recently.
Yeah, I think when I think of Web API, I think of just the... All right. When I think of REST, I think of that applies to the general concept of CRUD operations, create, read, update, delete, just kind of general, almost like it's a interface. It's kind of like, here's the generic schema of what this means. But ASP.NET Core Web API is what a .NET developer would use to then create their APIs using REST, in quotes, for all of those things, right? Is that a correct statement?
That's a pretty correct statement. I got into a conversation with Chris Martinez, the guy who created API versioning, Web API versioning, which is a fantastic package we'll talk about a little bit today and a lot in the blog post that we're putting out tomorrow. but he kind of referenced Roy Fielding's dissertation on REST, which I think came out in 2000. And then that Roy Fielding kind of talks about how like he puts forward the concept of REST. He talks about how the idea of REST is more about HTTP than it is about like how you choose to define REST or not to define REST. If you look at HTTP verbs, it's got, you know, it's got a get method, you know, gets like list. It's got get by ID, you know, get with parameters. That's usually like your get single. When you start really looking at it, it's got delete. It's got put, which is update. So really HTTP could kind of be considered like a protocol that enables like CRUD operations, like you said earlier. And that's kind of the idea of REST. It gets really abstract, but you've got frameworks like Web API or Azure Functions, or I think Express and Node has similar API things. We've been talking about Fast API a lot with Python. So there's a lot of different frameworks that enable you to build, you know, RESTful APIs. But I just stick to the term HTTP APIs because it tends to upset fewer people.
That makes sense. Well, so why should, you know, client developers, Xamarin developers sort of care about, you know, web API, web, you know, HTTP APIs? Like, why are these things important?
I'd like to think of an anecdote on that. It's a great question. At one point I was working with an enterprise DBA, and you know, we were talking about creating a RESTful API to kind of expose some things on on the web. And the individual, I remember, he said something like, "Well, why don't we just open up port 1433 in the firewall?"
Obviously, like, that's the very natural thing to do.
Not a very good idea. For those of you that don't know, that's the SQL port. You would have to do that if you wanted to write, you know, entity framework code that ran on your Xamarin app that made a connection back to the database. Not to mention the fact that you'd have to put the connection string for your database on the phone, which would mean somebody could invariably get to it. That's not good either. So, you know, that's why you would want to use something like an HTTP API. So you could not only control access, but you can also kind of control the shape of the data. Like you don't have to give somebody a person object with all the different fields in the database. You give them like a person view model or a person service model. And that would essentially just have the stuff necessary to like draw the view or to execute whatever business operation requires that data to actually operate. So that's kind of my tall answer to that question. You know, we would use HTTP APIs, REST APIs to be able to do that request response model. You know, if you think about the other shows that you've done with SignalR, you've got the concept of the, as we call it, the tunnel effect, which is when, you know, your mobile device goes into a tunnel. If your connection breaks, so does your SignalR connection. So, you know, in a request response world, you don't need that, you know, constant connection the way you would in a real-time connection. So that's why you want to use a REST API, because it's, you know, request response, it's lower level. My Raspberry Pi can do it. You know, pretty much any client can watch can do it.
Yeah. And there's tons of these HTTP and REST APIs readily available. But, you know, as .NET developers, we can create them, which I think is the cool part is, you know, the vision of writing C# code everywhere is something that I loved about it. Whether you're going to, you know, create an Azure function, you're going to use SignalR, you're going to use a web API, you can share code between everything. I think that you have some really cool stuff that you want to show off when it comes to these web APIs.
Yeah, I can definitely do that. I can definitely do that.
Let's do it.
I think I've got my screen shared. There we go. Perfect. So I'm in VS Code today. And what we're doing is on the ASP.NET team blog, we actually have a series of blog posts that are coming out kind of specific to building APIs using using web API. We'll talk a little bit in that about functions, but one of the things we talk about a lot is this concept of open API, which is essentially a descriptive layer. So I go through this in the first blog post on the series, which is really talking about creating well-described or, you know, discoverable APIs. Let me kind of show you what's in that blog post. So here I've got a web API project. In the web API project, I've got two controllers. I've got an admin controller, which essentially would give me the ability to get all the orders. You know, that's not something I would want a customer to be able to do. I also wouldn't want a customer to be able to get a specific order, and I definitely wouldn't want a customer to be able to check inventory unless I would be able to control that, et cetera, et cetera. However, on the shop controller, you know, I'm kind of bifurcating by, you know, visibility, if you will. Everything in the shop controller would be what James's Xamarin app would talk to. James would probably have a different Xamarin app to talk to the admin controller that we would log into.
You know? Yes.
So that's kind of the way it is. One thing you'll see in this code is I'm using ifdefs here, and I kind of want to show you why. So what I'll do first is I'll just do a quick .NET watch run. I'll just let this run. Once that opens, once the server starts, once Kestrel starts, it's going to pop up in my web browser to the Swagger UI page.
Yeah, you might want to actually describe really quick, like what even is a controller, right? Because we just used a bunch of cool, fun words like Swagger all of a sudden, controllers. Like, what is a controller? Yeah. And then what's going on here?
Sure, I can totally do that. So a little bit of an introduction into like kind of the topology of a web API project. So web API projects are built on top of our MVC approach to building web apps, model view controller. In a model view controller application, you've got a concept of having a model, which I don't think I have in here. I've got that in a separate project that I'm referencing. So model would be something like, if I come down here, order. You know, we might have an order class that has an ID, a couple of properties on it, yada, yada, yada. I might have a separate model here called product. The product would just be what I would want to show in like a list, be able to, you know, look at the products in my cart, that kind of thing. So that's the concept of a model. Now a view, I'm not going to have any because it's an API. So my view would essentially be JSON data, you know.
Gotcha.
I'm not going to have any views, not going to be doing a bunch of requests because a lot of what I'm doing is actually stored in memory cache. So I don't, when the app spins up, there's no data. So you won't really see me doing any views. That's where you come in on the mobile side. But the controllers are essentially, to me, a web API controller kind of serves one purpose. And that purpose is to get some sort of a HTTP request. In this case, it would be a post, an HTTP post request. Then what I'm going to do is use, you know, essentially my business logic, my services, my middleware services to go and get data from a database, or to get data in this case from Memcache, because it's just a test implementation.
Okay.
Then I would do my stuff, and then, you know, do my business operations. And then I would, you know, respond with some sort of an HTTP response. And in this case, you'd see here that I would respond, you know, I try to create the order if everything works, you know, kind of the general semantia in HTTP is if I issue a post request and it works, I'm going to want to tell you your object was created. So I would respond with an HTTP created message. If something goes wrong, AKA you're trying to create an order that I've already got that as an ID, like you send me a 2 and I've already got order ID 2, I'm going to have a conflict there because that's my identifier. So in this case, I would return a conflict.
Gotcha.
By that same token, if I were to scroll down here and see, here we go, in my get product method, this is when I would actually try to get an individual product by its ID. If you were to give me an ID of James, you know, I'm not going to find that. That'd be the name. So essentially what I would want to do is return a 404. So in my web API, I would want to say not found. You know, it's like you go to a page, it's not there, but it's an API. So I kind of want to use that same HTTP RESTful kind of lingo. I want to use all those verbs and use the default responses appropriately.
That's cool. So this is all built in, those not founds, these okay. These are like these verbs that you're sending. And that store service, right? Like you said, it's a memory cache, but that would be something that would connect to a database, maybe go to Azure or do some, you know, other, you know, SQL databases or on-prem databases. It's generic. It's like, hey, that's where the data lives.
Right.
And this is cool because it's just going to expose the data that it wants, like you said, where you saw the admin controller is for admin stuff, a shop controller is for shop stuff, and it's publicly available versus private APIs.
Right.
That's really cool.
It's cool. And what's really nice about this is, you know, when you start talking about an API, you know, what's the first thing you do as a dev when you want to start trying out a new library? You use IntelliSense, right? Mm-hmm. You want to like discover what the, you know, what methods are there, what properties are there, that kind of thing. What happens inside of Visual Studio and the different products that give us that IntelliSense is they can essentially look at the code and look at the assemblies that we're coding against, and they can kind of interrogate what objects and properties like exist on it. And then they feed that, it's kind of like a language server. They'll feed that to the IDE. They essentially have a domain specific language that the IDE can understand. And essentially in RESTful speak, or in, you know, building API speak, you want to have the same kind of concept. And when we talked about Swagger just a second ago, Swagger is kind of the old term we used to use for a new thing that we call Open API.
Okay.
The Open API specification is essentially a JSON or a YAML based format used for describing your HTTP endpoints and an HTTP API. The Swagger UI page essentially looks at those Open API documents and then draws like a test UI on top of my API dynamically for me. This all comes in the Web API project for .NET 5 moving forward. We actually use an open source project here called Swashbuckle. Swashbuckle is a dependency that we take. You can uncheck the box if you don't need Open API, and we won't put it in there for you. But there's other ones like NSWAG, and we're talking about all those in the blog post that we have coming out this week on open source packages and tools that you can, you know, make your Web API experience more delightful.
Cool. Yeah, we'll put all those links into the show notes. So there's been a bunch of good blog posts have come out, and of course, links to the sample.
Yeah, it's been fun. And this, like here, you'll see that I kind of have this. This is my Swagger link. So I'll just click this, my Open API link. And this is, you know, this is essentially just like the blob of JSON that describes my API. So what I'll show you here is that, you know, if you take a look at it, just to kind of dissect it just briefly, and I do this in great detail in the first blog post on the blog. You'll see here that I've got this orders endpoint, and this basically says, you know, anytime I do a get on it, the admin is really the controller. It's tags for Swagger speak. We'll skip on that for now. In this case, I've also outlined the different parameters that I could send it. You know, I've got a versioned API, so that's one of the parameters that I would have to send. But then the last thing that it kind of talks about is the concept of a response. So, you know, if you tell me, you know, if you execute me, I'm going to, that sounds bad. If you execute this request, I'm going to return a particular list of responses. You know, if it's a get, I'm probably going to give you a 200 saying that worked, success. But you can see that I'm really only saying like the default response. If I were to go down below, there's another one, 200. This isn't really describing, we talked about that word a minute ago, this isn't necessarily describing the kind of responses that I might get from my API. And like we talked about earlier, in REST terminology, those responses are important. They kind of signify what happened when you made that request. Mm. So in the sample code, what I've done is I've used these ifdiffs to kind of give you an opportunity to turn on and off features in that open API generation. The first one that I would show you is, you see how we've got produces and consumes here? Mm-hmm. What I would show you with produces and consumes is that if you look here, you'll see that I'm saying that I would give you JSON, I would give you text. If I were to scroll down below, JSON text, but we know I'm never going to use the text format. I'm always only going to use JSON. So this is almost implying you could send me a content type of text and I'm still going to work. It won't. Oh. So what I can do is I can put these on my controller or on an individual method. My apologies for that. I can put these on an individual method. And what it will do is it will actually tell that method or that controller, I want you to only accept either on the request, which would be the consumes, or on the response, which would be produces JSON data. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you my project here, and I'll just take that switch and I'll paste it into here and just save my CS proj, and you'll see that this will open up again, or my .NET watch will notice that I've made a change and just go ahead and rebuild the app. And once it's rebuilt, because it's building here, my apologies for build time. If I were to flip back over here, once it finishes building and rerunning the server, see if we're there yet. There we go. If I refresh this. Oh, theoretically, if I refresh this, now you'll see that I only have the JSON. So we've essentially shrunken that open API document, but at the same time made it more descriptive by saying, I'm only going to give you JSON, or I'm only going to accept JSON.
Gotcha.
So that's good. The other two things I would show you when I talk about this in the blog post is we've got this concept called API conventions. And that's when we've got this concept in .NET and web API called API conventions. And it's essentially what this particular implementation, I'm using the default API conventions. What it will do is it will analyze your code when it builds it into an assembly. And it will see that the create order could theoretically return conflict created, or I think at one point it could also return not found. And instead of me having to like do all the sugar to make the open API generation process actually have all those responses in there, what I can do is just turn on that convention.
Oh, cool.
And I'll turn that on right here. And again, this is just in the sample code. I just gave you this so you kind of see it before and after. Look in blog number one of the series and you'll see that. And once that finishes building, when I hit refresh in that open API document, what you should see is that now, there we go, hit refresh. You always have to say hit refresh. If I were to scroll down here, you will see now I've got a 201 and I've got a 400.
Oh, very so cool.
Again, we're saying, look, this is what could happen. Oh, sorry. This is what could happen at some point in time when somebody were to call this request, either with something good or, you know, something not good that, you know, we didn't expect to have to process. The last thing I would show you in there, I'll go ahead and show you that these controllers over here, you'll see that we also have this one right here, operation ID. I won't go into like boring detail about how the open API specification is written and some of the details of it, but let's just say that there's this thing in open API called an operation ID attribute. And right now my document doesn't have any of them on here. You can see I've got orders. If I were to scroll down, I'll probably have another orders. I don't have another orders. I just have a different verb post, et cetera, et cetera. But it's kind of hard for me to discern what these individual things are. And what's really important is when you're thinking about that open API document, it's not just useful to that Swagger UI. It's also useful to things like code generation tools, which I think are really good. So what we would do here is we would use this operation ID, and I'll paste that one in the very beginning because it's my favorite attribute in all of open API. When that thing runs, what you will eventually see in the OpenAPI, and I'm going to go over here to the Swagger UI page, and you'll see these awfully named operation IDs. These are generated based on the name of the controller and the name of the method. Now they've all got pretty names.
Pretty, very nice.
And if I go over here and I hit refresh again, sorry, now I've got this operation ID for each one of these individual operations. And why does that matter? Because at some point, I'm going to want to generate code that I'm going to basically use in something like a mobile app. So to show you what that code would look like, I'm going to open up my generated client here. And in this code, which is in the sample project for the series and in the sample project for our show today, you'll see that we have this NSWire generated client, which uses some of our internal tools, which use a different open source package called NSWAG to actually do C# generation. But if you look in here, you'll see that there's kind of two sets of ways of looking at this client. One of these ways has names on an API client like create products async with very clearly named terms, or update product inventory. Those names come directly from the value of that operation ID attribute. Oh. So if you omit it, what you end up getting instead of these clean names are guesses in what those names should have been, like products all async, products async, products to async. Nobody's going to want to use that. Orders to orders. You'd have to look at the IntelliSense to figure out what you pass it to know if it's a get or post or whatever. So rather than make the code generators have to dance like that, or to have to make something like logic apps or API management or power apps, like show somebody a name they can't really figure out how to use, a very simple solution in your web API code is to literally just use the name argument like this, and to just give it a name of the method. You have to name all your methods different anyway. Yeah. So you know, if you just use name of it, you get it for free. That's something I'm borrowing from the functions templates here. Thank you, Jeff and Co, for those in the templates. The name of stuff really makes it great when you want to essentially match your operation ID of your API directly to whatever your underlying class structure might be. But I've just shown you kind of in a couple of steps here how to not only generate kind of your test page, but to also kind of clean up your descriptive layer and why that matters, because, you know, this description is all clients are going to know about your API, and they're going to have to infer what to do from that OpenAPI document. So you want to really kind of make that as clean as possible. And when you do, you get things like API versioning in here, since I've got a different version. And see, this method actually shows up only when I'm on version 1.1. And all of that just snaps together. This is all the middleware just snaps together for us.
So that's super cool.
Yeah, it's cool. But I think you have some client stuff you want to show, and I don't know how to do this Xamarin stuff. So I'm excited. Show me something cool.
Well, sure. Let's go ahead and swap over to my machine. There we go. Perfect. So I took your exact same project and solution. And what's cool about this is, you know, you showed off that you had this API, which is right here running. Mm-hmm. And you had a few different ways of making this API a little bit better. You have an NSWAG generator, but you also have this refit abstraction. And refit's really cool. We actually had a previous episode on refit. But what's nice about this is, while it looks like a lot of projects, like what we have is we have some models over here, some abstractions, right? Mm-hmm. So these are things like the order, the product, things that we're sort of used to, C#9 records, beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. And what's cool is that this abstraction is going to be shared between our API, our NSWAG generator, our refit client, and all of our mobile apps. So you created like this refit client, and it's cool because refit will really make it super simple. You create a REST client for this, and you just say get products, and you can really streamline and make it super, super nice. And here's what that API client looks like. It's super nice. I mean, look at that. That's how you describe it.
This is when Claire introduced me to refit, I got super excited because it was sort of the things that I really liked about WCF, from the concept of you have your service interface. So I just have like a C# interface, and I can decorate it with these get, post, you know, whatever, you know, verb methods, and give it the endpoint address, and it just works. It's fantastic. Yep. Like if you're looking into doing this, I would highly take a peek at refit. It makes it super cake.
And if I didn't have these generators or refit, like I would just say like HTTP, and I'd use HTTP client. I'd do the posts, I'd do the gets, I'd do all the things, totally doable. But a lot of these generate all that code for you automatically. So it's really cool. So here's what I did is I created a very simple page over here, products page. All right. So this is what it looks like. It's beautiful. And what I have so far is I have this view model, which I'm going to use to get that refit. I have a refresh button. I just have a list view, right? So here's a list view. It's bound to these products. I could pull the refresh. It's going to call refresh, the same as this button. And then I'm just going to put the name and the inventory count down here in this nice little frame, nice little card view. And then I have this little floating action button down here that I generate so I can add a new item. So I can tap on this and it'll ask me for the product name. Now, I have this thing running here. So just like you were running it locally, I can run it local and my mobile apps can talk to it. So check this out. What I can do is whenever I come into my backend, I can just say, what is this thing running on? Now, Android emulators use a virtual, you know, Ethernet connection thingy. So it runs on this 10.0.2.2 whatever, and iOS runs on localhost. But this is kind of in a lot of our templates and documented well, and I'll put links to the show notes there. But that's the IP address I'm going to go on. And then what I'm going to do is I have a simple refresh command. So go get the stuff and check this out. All I got to do is use my client. See how this is REST for iKentoso Online Orders API client? Mm-hmm. It's the same exact one that you have in your command line one. I just literally copied and pasted.
Nice.
Like it's the same exact thing. Like I could literally just copy this, you know what I mean? Like from one to another, when I refresh, go get my products. I have this product list over here that's going to display in the UI, and I'll say products, replace range, and say products.
Oh, that's sweet.
Lowercase products. There we go.
You don't rip your caps lock key off?
Like I always caps lock all the time, always. So, all right. So here's the products, right? It's nice. And then we can add another one. So here I'm just going to have a little prompt built into Xamarin Forms. It's going to ask them for the name. And then we'll just simply go await client dot create product. So it's generating this create and get products for us. So we can do that. We can do a new product request that's coming in. I can give it an ID. And I'll say 1,000 plus, I don't know, whatever my products.count are, so we don't run into a conflict. Inventory, we'll just set it to 1 for now. And then name, we'll set that equal to the name. And I'm done. Like, you know those lines of code, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty straightforward that's going on there. And remember that all I'm doing is I'm saying, whenever that product list updates displayed in the UI, here's a little frame, little stack layout, not too different from your Razor views, but you know, instead of looping over them, I say, hey, here's a data template. Here's what everything should look like. And it'll display those. And then down here, there's literally a button that I have. And when I tap on it, it calls that add command, which is going to be this add button right here. So we use an MVVM. It's kind of like MVC, but you know, more Vs, more Ms.
Right. Yeah.
So that's what you kind of got there. So here's my Android emulator. And like your machine, it's going to build.
That's cool. Like I have service models, you have view models.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're not that different. You know what they're I mean? Not.
Yeah.
My view models call your controllers. You know, it's kind of this nice harmony between the two of them that they call. And then the models are the same, right? The models are being shared 100% mm-hmm. between all of your controllers, anything else. So there's no data here. So I'm going to add a point here. I'll say, hello world. I guess that's not a great name. Let's just call it coffee. That's better. Yeah, that's good. I'll hit add there. Now, remember, like I just added it, but I didn't add it locally at all. I didn't like create that local because I don't have the product. When I hit refresh, I can actually go ahead, add some breakpoints here, hit refresh, and we're going to call that web API. And over here, now we have one back over here, right? So it's boom, it's back, it's good to go, and it's awesome.
That's cool.
And in fact, if I went over to my local host, 5,000, that should just go to the /swagger.
You have to type in swagger. Yeah.
There it is. Cool. This is great. So I can verify this because I can look at the get products and swagger, try it out, like you just showed, and boom, right? Yeah. From my mobile app over into my web API, and anybody else could consume this. So it's all nice and awesome. And as you can see, I'm also using all of your cool, nice little things there. So I can see get products, which literally maps to get products, and it all works beautifully together, Brady.
Okay. That's what happens. That's great. That's been fun. That's cool. I did not think I was going to be this excited about how you were able to extend this. This is exactly what this sample needed. This is fantastic.
It's very minimal code. I mean, I literally just added two lines of code and it's done. The rest is just boilerplate, right? Just like a little bit of UI stuff, a little bit of try catching, very minimal, but it's a great little kind of like, hey, here's what you can do with all the great stuff that we have.
Now I want to talk to you more about like, could we generate screens? Could we generate XAML screens from OpenAPI?
I think that might be a whole nother episode.
Probably.
Brady. Well, cool. Thanks, Brady, for coming on and showing off all this awesome stuff. And I'm glad we could collaborate together on this thing.
This is great. We'll have to do SignalR next.
Yes. Cool. All right.
Awesome.
Oh, cool, Brady. Thank you so much. We'll, of course, put all of the links into the show notes below. And make sure that, you know, if you like this video and you want to hear more, give it a thumbs up if you're over on YouTube, or leave a comment below, no matter where you're watching this video. We read those. We super appreciate that. And if you're over on YouTube, hit that subscribe button and ding that notification bell so you become a part of the notification squad and get updated every single time we put out a brand new episode. Well, that's going to do it for this week's Xamarin Show. Thanks to Brady again, and thanks to all of you for tuning in, and have a good one.